You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm fired up right now. News, latest headline. State of Virginia, man, is a total shit show right now. Washington Post, 17 minutes ago, posted a story with this headline. Virginia Attorney General Herring says he wore blackface in college. Okay, so you have the governor of the state who has a picture, I want to say in his medical school yearbook, in which there's two people in the picture. One's in blackface, and the other's in a Ku Klux Klan costume. Right. Okay, so that was done in the 80s. Now, you have the lieutenant general of Virginia, his accuser, who's accused him of sexually assaulting her, came out today, and she's no longer anonymous, and says, yeah, the allegation is from me. And so there's now a face that goes with that. So that's under investigation. So the attorney general made the following statement. Now, Mike had, Mike Musselman, yesterday or a couple days ago, I guess Monday when this first came up, said, yeah, you know, this stuff with the governor of Virginia, I mean, come on. It means, like, so you did something stupid as a kid, and you're going to pay for it for the rest of your life? And I said, you know what? I agree with you. I said, but, right, the Ku Klux Klan outfit in the picture. And then somebody emailed later and said, So my point to Mike was, I agree with what you're saying. I don't think this case is the one to make that example with, that point with. Because in the 80s, that was 15 to 20 years, depending on when in the 80s it was. After the Civil Rights Movement, the apex of it in the 60s in this country. Okay? The Ku Klux Klan wasn't a funny thing. So if you thought it was funny, you're probably stupid. Okay? And then the email wrote, not only stupid, but then to include that as one of the pictures of you in the yearbook? Are you kidding me? That's straight up crazy. So I agree with that. So in my opinion, the governor of the state, you know, there's some things I can save you from. I can't save you from that. Okay? This, I would say, is different. All right? This is the state of the Attorney General for the state of Virginia. Here's his statement. In 1980, when I was a 19-year-old undergraduate in college, some friends suggested we attend a party dressed like rappers we listened to at the time, like Curtis Blow, and perform a song. It sounds ridiculous. Even now writing it. No, it doesn't. Right? I mean, so at 19, you're supposed to be so culturally sensitive, you know, that you can link your desire to impersonate Curtis Blow with Al Jolson doing blackface and the barring of black entertainers from the entertainment industry, you know, in the 1920s, 30s, and whenever, however long that went on. Right? But because of our ignorance and glib attitudes, and because we did not have an appreciation for the experience and perspective of others, we dressed up and put on wigs and brown makeup. Herring referred to it as a one-time occurrence and said he accepted full responsibility. He went on, "That conduct clearly shows that as a young man, I had a callous and inexcusable lack of awareness and insensitivity to the pain of my behavior that my behavior could inflict on others." Quote, "It was really a minimization of both people of color and a minimization of a horrific history I knew well even then." So anyway, Virginia. But again, so he made a mistake. I don't think it rises. There's nobody in a hood. He was impersonating a rapper. He was in college. He was 19. Right? Okay, he was stupid. Right? I can accept that. And I think that Mike's point would be valid. Right? So, so that is in our news, right now. State of Virginia, man. What a shit show. What a shit show. Another story. We're going to check Marine Corps news here in a second, but another story I want to look at. And it is about maybe. Doesn't go anywhere. It talks about a grueling new Army physical fitness test. So I want to talk about that. So let's look at some Marine headlines as something we didn't get a chance to do. Quote, "Great nations do not fight endless wars. Trump touts troop withdrawals in his State of the Union." There's a whole lot of baggage you could unpack with that. So, President was out, you know, making the case that our brave troops have now been fighting in the Middle East for almost 19 years. In Afghanistan and Iraq, nearly 7,000 American heroes have given their lives. More than 52,000 Americans have been badly wounded. We have spent more than $7 trillion in the Middle East. As a candidate for president, I loudly pledge a new approach. Great nations unite, do not fight endless wars. You know, I think, I don't know if that's a glib thing to say, but, you know, and let me lay this at the people in the, of the part, let me lay this at the people, at the feet of the people at the Department of Defense and the State Department. Okay? You fight wars to win the peace, to get in a position to fashion something out of what you fought for. And we are horrible at it. We fight, you know, we win conflicts militarily, and then what happens? We can't create what people want to create. And it sucks. It sucks. I mean, and so, you know, the State Department, their efforts, USAID, their efforts. I mean, if you can't win the peace, then don't go. Don't ask people to die for it. It's unethical. It's immoral. And so I understand, you know, the president's point, right? And it's a good point. But that decision should have got made. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, think about it. The decision to go to war in Iraq. Total bullshit decision. And the arrogance of a guy like Don Rumsfeld to think that we're going to go tip this country, Arab country, that's really split into three. He didn't understand Iraq to start with. He didn't understand Iraq to start with. The three factions that if you didn't sit on, he thought he could just fairy dust that shit. Don Rumsfeld is an idiot. He's a straight up idiot. An arrogant idiot. I remember, I've told this story before, so forgive me if you've heard it, but in 2004, we get to Iraq. We send a major, I can't remember his name, but he, we send a major over to Camp Ramadi. And what he's supposed to do is he's supposed to take inventory of their weapons, their equipment, their comm gear, and come back and report, right? And how many people they have on the payroll. So he comes back. And he's got a piece of binder paper with like the edge ripped off. Like somebody pulled the corner off to write a phone number on it. Yeah, he's got that ripped off. And, he comes in and he pulls this out during a staff meeting with General Mattis. And he said, "Sir, this is the payroll. Okay. And it was written on the front side and the back right. These are all names. We believe that there's extra names on this. And so when the federal government pays the quote-unquote national police force, all the extra people that really aren't on the rolls, all that money goes to the chief of police." Oh, he then cuts the tribal, you know, the sheikh, you know, a portion of that. That's how they make their money. Oh, got it. What about radios? They don't have any. What about vehicles? They don't have any. You're like, what? So they don't communicate and they don't have vehicles? No. What do they have? Well, they have some weapons and not very many, and that's what they have. Okay, and so the next thing, okay, so is there, like, are there vehicles on the way that, like, they're in big ships coming there and they're going to put ashore, go into port in Basra or in Kuwait, and we're going to put them on trucks and bring them up here? No. Is there any plan to give them radios? No. And I remember thinking, what kind of stupid shit show is this, man? Like, so did the United States plan this? Did they not know what they were doing? And the answer is they didn't know what they were doing. And so when the president says great countries don't fight endless wars, he's right. He's right. But what great countries do is when they do start conflicts, they're pretty good at winning the peace. And we are not. And we are not. And let me tell you, thank God we're insulated by those two big oceans that we have and that we don't have to pay for the shit that we do. Right? Because we're relocated closer to Europe. And had to deal with that immigration disaster? Yeah. Which would be entirely appropriate because we started it. So, I have mixed feelings about, he's right, but when you're going to start a conflict, right, you're supposed to have a plan to end it. You don't go to war unless you know how, that you're going to win the peace and what you're going to fashion in its wake. I mean, tell me the world wouldn't be better off right now. Saddam Hussein still in power in Iraq, right? All the hundreds of thousands of people that have been killed over there still alive, right? And living less than wonderful lives, but still alive in his Iraq that we kind of continue to have the no-fly zone and thump his ass whenever he gets out of line. Yeah, I mean, come on. So, President, again, he's still getting, depending on who you read, some people will never give him a compliment, but I would say most moderates are acknowledging that the President struck a conciliatory tone in his speech last night, and so, good for him. A Lance Corporal argued, this is another story, headline, dishonorable discharge stands for Lance Corporal sentenced for bludgeoning and nearly killing another Marine at a barracks smoke pit. He was contesting his dishonorable discharge. Lance Corporal argued his dishonorable discharge for nearly killing a corporal during a fight at the barracks smoke pit was far too severe. A military court disagreed. Lance Corporal Tyler Goodlin was sentenced to 40 months of confinement, a dishonorable discharge and reduction to private following a March 2018 general court-martial aboard Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, that convicted him of aggravated assault. Goodlin appealed to the sentence to the United States Navy-Marine Corps Court of Criminal Appeals, arguing that his dishonorable discharge was too harsh. It's called consequences, bro. According to the appeals court, Goodlin got into a verbal altercation with another Marine while at the barracks smoke pit. Challenges were made and a physical altercation became imminent when the Marine on the third deck began to make his way down to the smoking area to confront the appellant. The court document reads, Goodlin picked up a 3-foot-long, 7-pound metal rod, swung it, hitting a corporal who reportedly was trying to de-escalate the situation in the face. The corporal's jaw was broken into 6 pieces. He lost 2 of his teeth, suffered scarring and nerve damage, was placed in a medically induced coma for several days, and nearly died from his injuries, according to court documents. The court said, in its opinion, that the evidence of violence far outweighs Goodlin's prior clean record and good service. While Goodlin was originally sentenced to 40 months confinement, the convening authority suspended confinement in excess of 15 months in keeping with a pretrial agreement. Goodlin could appeal the decision to the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Force, the highest military court of appeals. So you want to do what you did, and then you want a slap on the wrist? Right, under the heading of, there's some things I can't save you from? Like, hitting somebody in the jaw who's trying to de-escalate something with a piece of metal breaking their jaw in 6 places and almost killing them? Yeah, that is, I can't walk that one back for you, bro. Sorry about that. I mean, I'd really like to, but I can't. Email. At first, I thought you were making that stuff up about Virginia, but clearly you are not. Holy smokes. I would like to say, though, that I do concur with your judgment about the actions of the Attorney General as opposed to the governor. I'm about your age, Mac, and I grew up in the Tennessee-Kentucky area. The Ku Klux Klan was no joke in the South. It stood for something very different, and I can remember my mom railing on that organization. To think that in the 80s that you would not only take a picture with somebody in those robes, but that also that you would include that in your yearbook photos is absolutely astounding. As you said, there's some mistakes I can't save you from. How that's never surfaced and become a part of his political life is pretty amazing. And you know what? No kidding. No kidding. So, yeah, interesting. You know, I wanted to kind of do a follow-up story. We talked about among troops, vaping is now more popular than cigarettes. Story that ran yesterday, later on in the day. Fort Worth man killed after vape pen explodes, had piece of the e-cigarette lodged in his throat. Alice Brown raised her grandson, William Eric Brown, as if he were her son. This week she will bury him. He had a future ahead of him, a life in front of him, said Alice. The Tarrant County Medical Examiner, and this is out of Fort Worth, Texas, says a 24-year-old died January 29th from a stroke caused by a severed artery from a vaporized pen explosion. The explosion happened in the parking lot of a vape shop near Beach and Golden Triangle in Fort Worth on Sunday, January 27th. Smoke and Vape DZ, I guess the store, told CBS 11 Brown didn't buy anything but wanted help using a mechanical mode style vape pen. The manager said they don't sell the brand because it's known to have issues. The shop manager said he called an ambulance when he saw Brown in trouble in the parking lot. That went across his lip, apparently somehow, and cut his lip, said Brown's grandmother. That three-piece thing went into his throat and stayed there, and that's what doctors would have had taken out as soon as they got to the hospital, and they decided to wait until Monday or Tuesday. Family doctors said they knew Brown had a piece of an e-cigarette lodged in his throat and put him in a medically induced coma, but never operated on him. I don't get how this guy comes in alive with something lodged in his throat and we don't operate him on him and he dies. Like, who thought that was a good idea? Anyway, so I read about that, you know, they were known to have safety issues. And then I saw that story late in the day yesterday. And so I thought that I would bring that up. All right. Let me see if I can pull this audio up. We're going to take a break here in a few minutes. And a couple of stories. New Mexico governor pulls National Guard troops from the border. The governor of New Mexico ordered the withdrawal of the majority of the state's National Guard troops on the U.S. border with Mexico on Tuesday in a move that challenges President Trump's description of a security crisis. Again, I've said that what's going on the border merits observation because the reason that troops were sent down there was that there was a crisis, right? And so, again, I think somebody needs to come clean with the American people that we're not playing illegal political games with active duty military down on the border. And if there's a requirement that somebody needs to, I think, somebody needs to make that case. If it's a made up load of bullshit, which the President of the United States, is not, a stranger to, then that also needs to be kind of laid out there. Two more stories. We'll take a break. Actually, three. Turkey's President Erdogan slams the U.S. over delays in Syria buffer zone. Recep Erdogan, right? The president of Turkey had discussed the United States getting out of the Euphrates River Valley in Syria, creating a safe zone. Turkey has demanded Syrian Kurdish militia withdraw from there, and Erdogan has been seeking logistical and financial assistance from Washington for that. Syria's main Kurdish parties have rejected the Turkish proposal for a safe zone, saying Ankara's control of a 20-mile border area would endanger the Kurds. Erdogan, addressing his ruling party's legislators in parliament, said that if the U.S. does not keep its promise to cleanse the region of terrorists and does not contribute to the creation of a safe zone under Turkey's control, which means pay for it, then we will take care of our own business. Our patience is not without limits. If the terrorists in Manbij are not removed within weeks, our waiting time will come to an end, he warned. In the same way, if at the east of the Euphrates, the people of that region are not allowed to establish self-rule with Turkey's support, then our waiting time will come to an end. There you have it. He went on. In other words, we will have the right to bring our own plans. No threat can deter us from our path, including being placed on a sanction list. So there you have it. The president of Turkey calling out the president of the United States. And again, the president of the United States, that's what you get for not listening to the people around you and doing stupid shit on Twitter. Okay? Like, leave the Twitter alone while you're doing national security stuff, okay? Leave, back away from Twitter, okay? No bueno. No bueno. All right, next. CENTCOM chief says Trump did not consult him on Syria withdrawal declaration. So General Bodle testified yesterday, I think in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Yes, that was him. Quote, and I'll see if I can dig this audio when we take a break. I was not aware of the specific announcement. Certainly, we were aware that he had expressed a desire and intent to leave. I was not consulted. All right, he went on. The fight against ISIS and violent extremists is not over, and our mission has not changed, Vogel said. The coalition's hard-won battlefield gains can only be secured by maintaining a vigilant offensive against a now largely dispersed and disaggregated ISIS that retains leaders, fighters, and facilitators, and a profane ideology that fuels their efforts. So, yeah. So I always like to listen to that testimony because I think we all gain a lot of it. So you may hear a little bit of that testimony here in the next few days. Only because, again, I think that you can read what other people say, but all of a sudden you get a chance to hear what that guy says in detail. Which would I rather listen to? I think I would rather listen to him. Okay, and one more story, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll do the early bird, and I'll see if we can get some audio from General Vogel. U.S.-South Korea reach cost-sharing agreement on troop presence. The United States and South Korea have reached a tentative cost-sharing agreement for the continued presence of U.S. troops, as the U.S. State Department confirmed on Tuesday. South Korea has been providing $848 million a year to support the cost of helping approximately 28,500 U.S. troops on the Korean Peninsula under agreement that expired in December. CNN reported Monday that the new terms of the agreement, Korea would pay roughly about $1 billion a year. So you would add another $150 million, which seems to me like nothing. $150 million? Really? Now, if they would have thrown in $1 billion, to me, that would have been significant. But $150 million? Huh. I think that's called a hollow victory. All right, we will take that hollow victory, and we will then take a break right here. And when we come back, you'll either hear General Bodle or you'll hear the top five stories in Early Bird on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. The Boss. As You Turn Away. Out on the Edge of Town.
called Brilliant Disguise. Okay, I want to play a few minutes of General Vogel's testimony. So here it is.
To order the withdrawal of our troops from Syria before that was publicly announced?
I was not aware of the specific that announcement. Certainly we are aware that he had expressed a desire and intent in the past to depart Iraq.
So you weren't consulted before that decision was announced?
We were not. I was not consulted.
You mentioned in your testimony that...
Now, should he have been consulted? Well, I guess if General Dunford and the Secretary of Defense are involved in it, then it wouldn't be necessary that the President consult him, would it? Is that how we do business? I don't think so.
You use the word remnant with regard to ISIS. Can you give us a better number than remnant? What are we talking about here? Senator Cotton mentioned 20 to 30,000 fighters scattered in various places around the world. Is that accurate?
I think that is approximately what the intelligence community has estimated. That is left behind. I think we would generally share with that. That includes people of a variety of different characters. It includes fighters. It includes supporters. It includes facilitators within that.
How about in Syria and Iraq? What number would you put that?
I think that in general, from what I have seen, that is about the number that I've seen.
20 to 30,000.
Yes, but Senator, I think this is probably a low to moderate confidence number.
Is it a low estimate, or I'm sorry, you threw me with that. Do you think it's a higher number?
I think we don't.
Low to moderate confidence in the number. That's intel stuff, right? This is what we've had reported, and so when you get into the business of intelligence. One of the things you learn fairly quickly is, this is what we have, but we don't have high confidence in the sources that this is based on. So this is what we have, right, reported. However, we will tell you that. So it's kind of an interesting little intel thing.
We don't fully know.
We don't have a precise.
We don't have it with any specific accuracy. So it is always going to be a range. Number is always going to be a
range. One of my concerns about the withdrawal with that many ISIS fighters still in the area is that they'll just wait us out. The president announces a withdrawal. The saying I've heard is the Americans have the watches, but we have the time. Are they just going to wait and hunker down for a couple of years or a couple of months and then resuscitate their efforts?
Well, with
if you were if you were their military commander, wouldn't that be what you'd do? Say these guys are leaving, we'll just, bide our time.
Well, certainly, Senator. But our approach here, as I mentioned in my opening comments, is that we are, as we look to withdraw from Syria, we are in a very deliberate planning process for how we will work with the international community, with our partners on the ground, with the rest of the coalition to ensure that we can keep pressure on this organization to prevent what you are talking about.
I think it's very important, and perhaps you can share with the committee in closed session what the strategy is for maintaining that pressure and how success is defined that will allow us to withdraw. Let me move on. With regard to, again, the withdrawal, Senator Heinrich mentioned the danger to the Kurds. I sincerely hope that in your exit interview with your successor, which will take place very soon, if not already, that you emphasize the importance of protecting the Kurds. If they are slaughtered by the Turks within the reasonable proximity of our leaving, it will be a stain on the honor of this country that will persist not only in terms of honor, but also in terms of our ability to attract allies to assist us in future projects of this kind. That's my biggest fear about what's going on now, and I believe the Turks are...
See, what we should be talking about is, have we achieved what we wanted to do before we are again withdrawn from a conflict? And then who are the architects of this stuff? You know, at one point we say, you know, General Mattis and you have General Dunford, and you say, hey, look, we are here, you know, for the long haul with our partners, the federal government of Afghanistan. And, you know, so what they've done is try to shape a policy that doesn't cost American lives and that and buys America a term insurance policy until the Afghan government can get their hands around the country. And then we decide, yeah, we're out. You know, the same thing in Syria. It is not costing, you know, you have more military people being killed in training accidents than you have being killed in Syria. It is a safer place to be. Yeah, arguably. And so, but now for political reasons, so that he can say on the next campaign trail that he fulfilled everything he said, unlike most presidents, he's actually done. So now our foreign policy is being yanked around by the president's campaign rhetoric, and a stupid conversation with the president of Turkey in which he got over his skis, and then got on Twitter, and now he's trying to walk it back. So now we're going to leave Syria, but we're only going to be in Iraq. Right.
Waiting.
Senator, I think this is a key task that we are looking at right now, and that is the protection of those who have fought valiantly with us, and ensuring that they remain safe as our diplomats and United Nations and others pursue a political solution here in Syria.
I certainly hope that's of the highest priority. You mentioned Iran and listed a whole series of malign activities in the region. Which would you prefer, the current malign Iran or a malign Iran with nuclear weapons?
Well, certainly, I think an Iran with nuclear weapons poses a more enduring and serious threat to us long term. Our approach to them does need to make sure that we deny all paths for them to get to a nuclear weapon.
Well, unfortunately, we've just abrogated an agreement that did just that, but we can discuss that in another setting. Final question on Afghanistan.
I'm going to go.
I don't understand we're negotiating unilaterally with the Taliban and not involving the government of Afghanistan. That I don't understand how that is going to get us to a final result if the government of Afghanistan, if we give away things they're not willing to give away.
Again, Senator, I think what the way I would characterize Ambassador Khalilzad's efforts is he's at the beginning of a process here to put together a framework that will allow the Afghans and Taliban to come together at some particular point to conduct some negotiations. All of this is being done with the knowledge of the government of Afghanistan. They understand what he is doing. I can't speak for the exact process itself, since that is Ambassador Khalilzad's, but I do know that he is in frequent consultation with the government of Afghanistan to ensure that they are best informed on the approaches that he is taking to continue to get this framework in place.
Good.
That is General Joseph Bodel. He's the outgoing CENTCOM commander and a Marine. Going to pick up a four-star, General McKenzie, going to pick up a four-star and become CENTCOM here in a matter of months. So General Vogel answering questions yesterday. His entire testimony is about 2 hours. So at some point you will hear at least a piece of that, because I like doing that kind of stuff. All right. Early bird. For top story we've already discussed. Great nations do not fight endless wars. Trump touts troop drawdowns. But they don't pull out unilaterally from shit they start. Should be the rest of that. They win phase 4. They win the peace. And then they leave. Or they bring the UN in to maintain the peace. That's what great nations do. They don't capitulate and run. So I think there's a second part of that sentence, right? There's a second part of that sentence, and the president has tactfully omitted that. Number two, French Air Force rehearses a long-range nuclear strike. How about that? The French Air Force has successfully practiced a nuclear strike mission, sending aircraft on an 11-hour mission to sneak a nuclear-capable cruise mission through simulated enemy air defense and nail it into the hands of a test range south of Bordeaux. Okay. So, they sent an aircraft on an 11-hour mission. What would be the point of that? Who are they going to strike long range, 11-hour mission? I mean, the only real enemy they have is Russia, unless they're trying to send China a message about don't mess with France. Yeah, in spite of our inability to control rioters in Paris, we're not to be messed with, all right? Mr. Macron, who used to be the leader of the free world, he's now the invisible man. Where did that guy go after his big pronouncement, right, at the 100th anniversary of the signing of the armistice that ended World War I, in which he bitch-slapped the President of the United States in public? Poof! You know, there might be, I don't know, is that karma? You do that stuff and then something bad happens to you? Mr. Macron is not... You know, has not been seen a whole lot of since then. Number three, budget for fiscal 2020 expected to be released on March 12th. The Trump administration expects to deliver its fiscal 2020 budget on March 12th, a six-week delay from the initial release date. So we'll all stand by on pins and needles for that, including everybody associated with the Department of Defense. Number four, the budget is really kind of an interesting thing to look at when you look at it in toto. Okay? That means altogether. Let me just give you some interesting stuff. The United States 2015 budget, okay? Where the money comes from. All right? Tax revenue, $2.05 trillion is raised from tax revenue. Individual income tax raised about $1.5 trillion. Corporate income tax, all that corporate money, they pay about not even a half trillion, $342 billion. All that corporate money that's rolling around, right? Good deal to be a corporation. And then there's another $156 billion categorized as other revenue. Custom duties, $35 billion. Excise taxes, $38 billion. That is your tax revenue. And then you have tax revenue trust funds, $1.13 trillion, which is Social Security, Medicare, excise taxes, customs duties, and other. You have a half a trillion dollars being borrowed, which is 16% of revenue. Where does the money go? Okay. $229 billion is spent on the debt, which is 6% of the budget as of 2015. Now, here's what's interesting, right? So, you have a total of, so taxes are 55% of our revenue, right? Trust funds are 30% of our revenue, and borrowing makes up the other 16% of the revenue. Okay? So what do we have? 3.18 and then another half. So $3.6 trillion. Okay? So you have mandatory spending of the $3.6 trillion. $2.45 trillion is mandatory spending. What is that? It is Medicare. It is Social Security. It is other. It is food assistance and unemployment. Yeah, how about that? Discretionary spending is the military, other, is the second largest category, right? Education, third. Housing and communities, fourth. International affairs, fifth. Energy and environment, 6. Transportation, 7. Only 29% of our spending is discretionary spending, what we see them arguing about. 65% of spending is program spending. Already in the works, nothing you can do about it. So a pretty interesting little aside I thought I'd give you there as we glimpse at the federal budget that's about to be released. Number 4, U.S. Navy admits failure on 760 million weapon to protect its aircraft carriers from an age-old threat. The U.S. Navy has shed light on a previously highly classified project meant to protect aircraft carriers from the grave and widespread threat of torpedoes, and it's been a massive failure. Unbelievable. The Navy abandoned a program to detect and kill incoming torpedoes in the water after it failed to make progress in testing, leaving its most powerful ships highly vulnerable. The anti-torpedo system in place will now be removed at a time when U.S. carriers are losing simulated battles to even older diesel-powered electric submarines, and China's military is openly discussing sinking carriers to defeat the United States. The U.S. spent $760 million on the system to save U.S. ships. Somebody got rich. And now it looks like even old North Korean subs could have a chance at a kill shot at the U.S. carrier fleet. You know, let me tell you again, might be moderately overstated, okay? Because in order for them to get there, what the Navy is investing in is more and more underwater drones that can actively ping, okay, that can actively ping. Because the problem when you ping, you give away your own position, right? Well, drones, they can ping all they want. You're going to kill our drone? Oh, whoa, you killed our drone. Nobody cares. So that's the problem of again, drones. Drones can die. Nobody cares. And the last story is a regurgitation of a previous story we've already heard. That is, CENTCOM chief says Trump did not consult him on the Syria withdrawal. Now, again, the rest of the story is, you know, to pick up the phone when he has Joe Dunford. What is Joe Dunford there for? What is the Secretary of Defense there for? What is his National Security Advisor there for? So the larger issue is that he ignored all of them, too. So anyhow, That'll do it on a Wednesday. If you're just tuning in, Alex Hetherington joined us early today, and we talked about Marine Corps West Expo that I'm presenting at. So I'm excited about that. Anytime I have a chance to do post-traumatic winning, I always have. Let me tell you, something always good comes out of it, which is part of the magic of post-traumatic winning. That's right. It's magical. So Alex came on, talked about there's a dinner tonight. I think you can still register. You might want to check that out, though. If you go to the Marine Corps Association's, if you go to their website, you can find out. And then, so we talked to Alex, and then after that, we talked to Mike Regner. Regner's a motivated dude, man. Yeah. So he comes on, and we talk about the expo. We talk about getting older and how you take care of your body. He's a physical guy. And then we talk about leadership and decision making relative to technology, some of which you'll see at the Marine West Expo, and I think you'll find that entertaining. But he's an interesting guest. So Mike Regner joined us, and then you'll hear in the last 40 minutes, last hour, you will hear kind of a news recap, a little bit about the president and his speech. So I think that's the big news of the day. As somebody who's a conservative, who was. Not terrified is the wrong word, but the president, man, that's not his strong suit. And I think they did a couple things. They by striking a moderate tone, and the favorable results that have been coming in through news organizations, that most of which are largely not sympathetic to the president, he's kind of dumped that the charcoal into the lap of Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats that run the House, saying, let's work together to do something. So that's kind of interesting. We also talked about the shit show that is the state of Virginia these days. Yeah, the Attorney General, if you haven't seen the news, the Attorney General admits that when he was 19 in college in the 80s, he was part of a rap thing in which they darken their faces. Right? I do not believe that that rises to the occasion of the governor of the state of Virginia posing in blackface with somebody in Ku Klux Klan outfit. So I would say that the Attorney General is what Mike Musselman was talking about the other day, and saying, hey, we've got to get over this death sentence for something you did, you know, as when you were young and stupid. You can apologize, you can live a good life, and blah, 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 blah. I think that applies to the Attorney General. I don't think it applies to the governor. And I would echo the sentiment of somebody who emailed the other day to say this. Hey, you know, taking the picture is one thing. Including it in your yearbook? So that's what you want displayed about you? I don't know that you can save somebody from that. And I would agree with that. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues. Have a great day. We will be broadcasting from the Marine West Expo tomorrow. So we'll see you down there. All Marine Radio has a table. Yeah, we do. So have a great day. On a Wednesday, All Marine Radio is over and out.